The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And a good evening, everybody. This is indeed Sports Talk 1240. Time is 8.02 p.m. It is August 6th, 2017. It is Sunday night. I am Jake Asman, joined alongside Dan Budick. We're here to fill in the next hour of Sports Talk Radio, hour one of Sports Talk 1240, right here on AM 1240, WGBB. Dan, we've been hosting here on this station for over 2 years now. I actually was on my Facebook page earlier today, and under like the memories notification that you get, it says 2 years ago today, you were hosting Sports Talk 1240. So 2 years later, we are still here and still going strong, this time as college graduates. I believe this is our third show on the station since we returned back from Ithaca in Maine. And, you know, it's always fun to come in here, West Babylon, and do a show. And we have a good one, as there's a lot to talk about. And over the next hour, we will talk some baseball, get into some football, big news involving Jay Cutler and the Dolphins. Colin Kaepernick remains unsigned. We have a lot to break down on the program tonight.
Oh, it's going to be great. And being back here at WGBB, it's been a couple of months. It's been since the beginning of June, I believe, since we've had the opportunity to be on these airways. But it's always good to be back and get the next hour going.
No question about that one. We begin with some baseball. We'll talk about the Yankees. They get the series split against the Indians after they won the last two games. Before we do that, though, an announcement from Mac and Melts. This hour of Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by Mac and Melts, located at 684 Stewart Avenue in Garden City, New York. Come check out Mac and Melts, the only restaurant in Long Island that specializes in everyone's favorite cheesy indulgence, mac and cheese, and grilled cheese. There are 16 different mac and cheeses and 12 different grilled cheese sandwiches for you to try, as well as 10 gourmet salads. Made fresh and made to order with the best ingredients, which means there is something for everyone. Come try some of our fan favorites, which include the Mac and Milk, which is mac and cheese in a grilled cheese sandwich, and the Buffalo Chicken Mac and cheese for those who like a little spice. Come treat yourself at Mac and Melts. And if you go to Mac and Melts, Dan, and say the code word Sports Talk 1240 or Asman Budick Show, you get 10% off.
I'll make sure I get there some point this week at the Mac and Melts.
My mom was actually there last week, and she told me it was phenomenal. So I've never been there personally. I've been told to go, and you know, I've been busy. I haven't had the chance yet, but you know, this week, you know, I'm going to try and get down there.
And who's not in the mood sometimes for a nice mac and cheese sandwich?
The best thing I did in college was I made a mean, easy mac. You know, I'm not a cook, but I can make a mean, easy
and
mac.
And I'm sure Mac and Melts is a little step up than the old easy mac.
I would imagine so.
For the sake of their customers, I hope so.
The number to call tonight, 631-888-8811. Once again, Jake Asman and Dan Budick with you until 9 p.m. and then hour two of Sports Talk 1240 comes your way. But Dan, as I said right before we started talking Mac and Melts, we begin with the Yankees and their series split against Cleveland. They lost the first two games. They then won the previous two games, including today. They won 8-1 over the Cleveland Indians. And we start with Luis Severino, who once again proved why he is the ace of the New York Yankees. The Yankees had lost four in a row. They were really struggling. They needed a great performance from their ace, and Luis Severino delivered. He allowed only two hits in 6 2/3 innings. He could have went more. They took him out. No reason to push him with an 8-1 lead. And the Yankees offense finally broke out, and they got a huge victory today to end that four-game losing streak and to get back on track heading into the off day tomorrow and then the Blue Jays in Toronto starting on Tuesday.
And I think Severino, we know what you're going to get out of him at this point. He has become the ace of the Yankees. He's become that go-to starter, maybe that guy who can get you a big win when you need it. And I think the Yankees definitely did today. And you mentioned his line, he was outstanding. But the story, I think, of today's game was the offense. It's the Yankees' offense that has really struggled since the All-Star break. They just haven't been swinging the bats that well. Aaron Judge, a home run today. Really a bullet off the bat of Aaron Judge today. He's got to get his offense going to where it was in the first half. That's a big part of what the Yankees were trying to do. And Jacoby Ellsbury, a big hit today. And finally get him going. It seems like he's just been a waste of money, a waste of a roster spot up until this point. If you can get contributions from Ellsbury, and again, getting Aaron Judge back into that flow he was in the first half of the season. I watched him. I got a chance to watch him over the last couple of weeks, and it just seemed like he wasn't comfortable. He was maybe swinging out of his shoes a little bit, chasing pitches he wasn't chasing in the first half, back a little bit to his 2016 form, where he struck out over 50% of his at-bats when he came up a year ago. But if you can get Aaron Judge back into form where he was, and I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think we know what he is. But when he gets back going, I mean, the Yankees offense is going to ride again.
I think part of the struggles with this Yankees team is you're relying on young guys to be your guys. You know, we saw Judge just go through that slump, and, you know, maybe his home run today, as we were just discussing, can get him going. But when you rely on a 25-year-old rookie who, to his credit, was the best player in baseball in that first half, so yeah, you need Aaron Judge to play well for this team to have a chance. But if he goes through a slump, and Gary Sanchez has been in a bit of a funk, the whole team has, quite frankly, besides Hedley and Didi Gregorius. But you look at this Yankees team, they're relying on a lot of young guys. Today, Severino came through, Judge hit a home run, and they win. That's kind of the balancing act you got to play with this team. Going in, you knew the young guys were going to play, and if they overachieved and were competing for a playoff spot, that's a successful year. However, expectations change when you go make a move for a Sonny Gray at the deadline, and you bring in a Tommy Canley and David Robertson, and you add Todd Frazier right before the deadline. So the expectations have changed, but you're still relying on a lot of young players to be the foundation moving forward. So the Yankees kind of being hot and cold offensively, that's what happens. Before this losing streak, they had just won 9 of 11 games. So the Yankees kind of are what they are, but they're good enough to be a playoff team. They're good enough to even win the division. I know they're 3 games back right now, but still 10 games to play with the Red Sox. But today was an important win because you get back on track. You get the great pitching from your ace. And if you're the Yankees, confidence-wise, Judge hits a big home run. You mentioned Ellsbury coming through with that big triple. Maybe that gets him going. And now with Matt Holliday going on the DL, the latest with the Yankees is, hey, that clears a spot for Aaron Hicks to now come back into this lineup potentially by this Blue Jay series. You get Hicks back in there, and, you know, now we're talking about a really good lineup once Castro comes back. And, you know, watch out for the Yankees. Greg Bird is starting his rehab pretty soon. So, you know, they're going to get healthier. And at the same time, as long as the pitching can hold up, and we know what Severino is, we know what Sonny Gray is now. Is Tanaka going to be Tanaka? Big start for him on Tuesday. The Yankees have a chance here to put some wins together and go on a run. They're good enough to be a playoff team. But when you make the moves that they made, the expectation is you got to go try and win that division now.
I agree. I think the expectations have definitely risen. But you hit on a great point, the fact that the Yankees' nucleus here is a lot of young players. Gary Sanchez, who before this season, you know, we only saw half a year out of him a season ago. And we only seen a half a season out of Aaron Judge in the form we think he could be in. So that's something to remember, is that this is a young Yankee team. And there's been a lot of talking about Aaron, about Gary Sanchez's defense and how it's taken a step back there, since he has been in this league over the last year, since he was called up, and he's not the same defensive player. He looks a little slower, maybe put on a little too much muscle. I don't know. But again, you gotta remember, these guys are young. The Yankees offense, it has a lot of young pieces in it. And you're going to have to go through a learning curve with both of these guys, Judge and Sanchez, and a lot of the people in the lineup. Frazier, too, as his impact goes on. So the Yankees are kind of walking a tightrope here where they want to contend. They have the pieces to contend. But if they went and slumped down the stretch, let's take it for instance, Jake. If the Yankees slumped down the stretch and Judge struggles and Gary Sanchez struggles and they miss the playoffs by a game or two, is it a failed season?
I'd be very disappointed if that's the case. I think you have to really recalibrate your expectations when you do what the Yankees did. After they were 21-9, and at one point they were 15 games over 500, and then most recently they were 12 games over 500, anything short of being a wild card team, I think, is a disappointment. And really, you know, why can't the Yankees go out there and win the division? They improved the rotation. You added Sonny Gray. Jaime Garcia, he wasn't great his first start, but obviously you expect him to go out there and give you some quality starts moving forward. You have the best bullpen in the sport, and we saw it the last two games. The Yankees, Saturday night, yesterday, they protected that 2-1 lead, but Tantis was as good as I've seen him all season. He was disgusting with that curveball. Chapman seems to have his head back on straight. Defense certainly helped him Saturday night. Gardner and Torres, I'm looking at you. But this is a Yankees team that we know where their strength is. Their strength is their bullpen. And if they can get a lead and get it to the pen, you feel very good that they're going to be able to get wins. And the way baseball's played nowadays and the way the Yankees have shown the ability, for the most part, to hit all season, yeah, I think anything short of the playoffs would be a disappointment. Going into the year, my expectation was, hey, compete for the wild card, and if they're doing that into September, you have meaningful games to watch. That's a successful season. But you know what? Expectations change. Now it's about making the playoffs, and that's why stopping this losing streak was important. Going on the road now, starting on Tuesday against the Blue Jays, must take 2 out of 3 from a bad baseball team that Toronto is this year. And then, oh, yeah, you got the Red Sox at home. You know, that's where the division's going to be won or lost. How you do against the Red Sox, the next 10 games they have against Boston. They got three this upcoming weekend, so a week from now. Then the following weekend, they play Boston again, and in between, they play the Mets for four games. So this upcoming stretch of baseball for the Yankees, you know, it's only August. You don't want to say that it's going to make or break their year, but you know what? They can't afford another bad week like they had this past week. They need to go out there, put together some wins, and play like the team that, you know, we know they're very capable of being. They've shown it multiple times throughout the course of the season.
And with the moves the Yankees made, there's every expectation that, you know, to make the playoffs and whatnot. I just think they're in a very unique spot because of the fact that they have so many young guys contributing in big places.
Well, have you ever seen a scenario where the Yankees are winning, but at the same time, they're going to be better in the future than they are right now?
Well, it's not just the Yankees. I don't think we've seen another team ever do something like
this. In sports, how do you rebuild and win at the same time?
Well, that's my point about the fact where if Judge struggles down the stretch and if Sanchez struggles and they can't put it quite together, we got to remember they are a young team. They got a lot of
good enough,
here.
Even if some of those guys struggle, to still make the playoffs regardless. You add Sonny Gray, you improve your bullpen, you still have Severino, who's your ace at the top of the rotation. Tanaka looks like, hey, you know, maybe he could be Masahiro Tanaka again. Even if Judge doesn't hit like he did in the first half, and to begin with, you knew that would be unrealistic, but if you can get 70% of what Aaron Judge was in that first half, you get Gary Sanchez head on straight, and you get him back in his lineup, because the Yankees need Sanchez's bat. I get they want to send a message about his defense, but Dan, at the end of the day, you need Gary Sanchez in that lineup. So, you know, you look at this Yankees team, and you know, what do they have to do to make the playoffs? They got to hit like they did the first couple months of the year, and, you know, their starting rotation, which is now drastically improved, has to deliver because, you know, the bullpen, you know, expectations-wise, they're the best in the sport. They will deliver.
And I think you made a great point about Gary Sanchez and needing him in there. Let's say the Yankees don't make the play or don't win the division, and they have to play in the wild card game. You need Gary Sanchez catching that one game. You need his bat in the lineup. You can't put – I like Romine. He's done a nice job when he's been in there. But you need your best guy going forward. So is it going to be a message that Gary Sanchez, you know, improves that defense? It really is amazing, though, talking about Gary Sanchez's defense, where it was a year ago.
He was great.
He was Gold Glove caliber when he came up last year. I mean, this guy came up and immediately was one of the best defensive catchers in baseball. Forget about his stick, which what he did at the plate last year when he came up, and we know the accolades he got, the home runs, the RBIs, the impact he had on the Yankees lineup, but it was defensively that was his feet behind the plate. He was so quick. He had a great pop time down the second base. He just seems a step slower for whatever reason. Is it the muscle he's put on? Is it maybe he didn't put enough emphasis on defense in the offseason? I don't know, but it's amazing. As good as he's going to be, and I think this guy's going to be a star, but there definitely has been a regression in his defense from when we saw him first a year ago.
You know, it's tough to pinpoint what exactly it is, but you know what the Yankees have to understand is, hey, even if his defense is not great,
he's got to play.
It's still above average. He's still throwing out runners 35% of the time. That's among the better catchers in baseball. This guy was still having an all-star season. He made the all-star team. They need him. You know, the Yankees can't afford to go more games without Gary Sanchez in their lineup. It worked today because they scored 8 runs, and Ellsbury had to hit, Judge hit a home run, and you got away with it. But right now, I mean, the Yankees are not scoring. You know, one game, you hope the bats can maybe break out. Now, going forward, they'll score runs. But, you know, you got the Red Sox coming up, the Mets. You need Gary Sanchez in there. You need him hitting in the middle of that order. Because now with Matt Holliday on the DL, and he hasn't been right since he came back in the first place, you know, you have some spots open to get that DH to Aaron Hicks or Clint Frazier. You know, there was so much talk among Yankee fans and media members. Oh, well, what are the Yankees going to do when Hicks comes back? You know, what are they going to do? They can't send Frazier down. He's hitting. They can't get rid of him. Well, now that decision kind of gets made for you. Holliday goes in the DL. Hicks comes back. Him and Frazier and Gardner and Judge can all rotate, getting half days off as DHs, and you get him in the lineup. And, you know, unless Jacoby Ellsbury starts hitting, and maybe that triple today will get him going, you're talking about a Yankees offense, assuming Sanchez gets back in there, and Joe Girardi said he will be catching on Tuesday. He'll catch Tanaka. You need him in that lineup, and you need the Yankees to continue to hit, and they should be able to hit once they get Hicks back, and they get Sanchez back in there. And, oh, yeah, Starling Castro started running. He'll be back relatively soon, and, you know, the expectation is Greg Bird will also be back by the end of the month. So, you know, it's a good problem to have if you're the Yankees. Too many healthy guys that can go out there and mash the ball.
And when Bird comes back, the question is, how healthy is he going to be to contribute to a pennant race winning team? Just one more note about Tanaka, and it just came to me. How many times is Romine, I know, towards the beginning of the season was more of Tanaka's personal catcher, and then the results weren't there. Has it been a decent split? I haven't been paying attention in the last couple of weeks how it's been with Tanaka's starts.
Now, Tanaka had a great start. They went back to Roman. This was earlier in the year.
Right,
we didn't know what it was. Then he got bombed with Roman as the catcher, and they threw that one out the window.
So, and now it's pretty much been back to Sanchez every time?
Yeah, and Tanaka's last three starts has been very good. You know, he followed up that 14-strikeout game with seven solid innings, a couple of the runs he gave up. I think, who was the team they played? It might have been the Tigers. It was the Detroit Tigers. A couple of the runs he gave up were unearned. You know, Tanaka's pitched well his last couple starts, and we know how important he is. We've been saying it on any show we've ever done about Tanaka all season. You look at his impact, and you look at what he was supposed to bring going into spring training, Dan. You know, if I would have told you that Tanaka would be the weakest link of the Yankees, not just their rotation, but maybe of the whole team, you would look at me like I had eight heads. You would say, no, he's actually the only given the Yankees have, especially in that starting rotation. And for most of the year, he's been bad. Maybe he's turned the corner. His past couple starts have been good. But if he is even maybe 75%, we made the point about Judge if he's 70% of what he was. If Tanaka's 75% of what he was last year when he was third in AL Cy Young voting, you know, you're talking about a guy that can come in, be a solid three starter to go along with Sonny Gray as your two and Severino as your one, and that's a really good top half of the rotation. They optioned Jordan Montgomery today, and I don't love it, but I get it. You know, he still has options. You have too many guys. They did not want to go to a six-man rotation, but he will be back in September to provide depth. I mean, the rotation's good enough to win a division, especially when you only need five or six innings from that rotation, and you turn it over to that bullpen. So Tanaka's as important to this season as anyone. However, if he could just be 75% of what he was last season, the Yankees will take it at this point and say, hey, that's good enough for us to win the division.
And with Montgomery going down, I'm not shocked the Yankees aren't doing a six-man rotation.
And that came out at the end of the game today, that they're going to option him down to AAA.
But my point of that is if there is a team that's going to do a six-man rotation, look how good Tanaka is or has been in his career with that extra day's rest. I'm a little surprised the Yankees weren't more open to maybe having a six-man rotation for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I agree with you. And personally, I don't love the move, to be honest. You know, Montgomery, I thought, pitched really well. He pitched well last night. You know, he could have kept going. You know, Joe, you could say he overmanaged the bit. It worked, so it can't kill the guy. He brought in David Robertson for the sixth and seventh inning, and Robertson, he was able to pitch two scoreless innings, and the Yankees won the game 2-1 last night. So I can't kill the manager for it. Montgomery was rolling, and for the most part, Jordan Montgomery, I mean, we've had conversations about him before. He's shown you that he could be a guy that you look at and say, hey, this guy's going to be part of the rotation the following year in 2018. The Yankees' rotation in 2018, gun to my head right now, Jordan Montgomery's probably in that rotation.
He has to be, right?
He's pitched well enough, and the only reason why he's sent down is what we thought might happen with Clint Frazier. He has options. However, you're right. If any team should go to a six-man, Tanaka pitches a lot better with that extra day of rest, and with the way he struggled, it's not the worst thing in the world if you go to Tanaka and you say, hey, we'll give you the extra day. Montgomery's still a very solid pitcher. You can win with him out there on the mound. So I agree with you. I'm a little surprised, but I just don't think the Yankees want to cater to Tanaka and say, oh, we got to go to a six-man. But if you have the depth, you have the depth. But at the same time, Jaime Garcia wasn't brought in here to be a long man. They want him to pitch.
Absolutely. And another point about the six-man rotation, it would also slice down the innings a little bit for Severino heading into the back end of the season.
And I think Montgomery, just getting to the innings, he has a bit of an innings limit too. So maybe it would not surprise me if they put him out in AAA and he only throws four or five innings a start until he's back September 1st.
631-888-8811. The Mets, 49-59, just getting underway. Sunday night baseball out at Citi Field on ESPN.
Against the best team ever.
Against the best team ever, trying to avoid a sweep. Mets losers of four out of their last five, and they've gotten just manhandled the last 2 days against the Dodgers at Citi Field. It's been, I've seen on Twitter, it's like Ebbets Field out. The Dodgers swinging at Ebbets Field
and
out there.
And there are more Dodger fans there than Mets fans.
Yeah, I did see that yesterday.
The Dodger turnout has been unbelievable, and I get it. They used to be in New York, but we're talking about a long time ago, but still a lot of people have L.A. ties to the Dodgers, the old New York ties, of course, when they were in Brooklyn, and you know, Ebbets Field, it's a great point by you. Citi Field's felt a lot like Ebbets Field. It looks like Ebbets Field, first off, from the outside, and they have the Jackie Robinson Rotunda when you first walk in. But yeah, I mean, right now, the Dodgers, 78-32. It's unbelievable what this team is doing. You can't even fathom it if you are a baseball fan.
43-7 in their last 50 games. I think it's third best all-time in a 50-game stretch.
And the first to do it since, like, the 1912 Giants.
Unbelievable.
New York Giants.
Amazing. And you look at this team, and at first base, Cody Bellinger is filled in as an all-star at first base. Adrian Gonzalez hasn't contributed anything to this team this year. They're paying Carl Crawford $21 million not to show up.
Is that the best life, just getting to that? Crawford being paid to not show up, Sandoval being paid to leave. I mean, these guys they live the life. You know, you show up, Jay Cutler making $10 million to show up to Miami. Dollars. We'll get to that later.
It's just funny, $21 million they're paying him, and they still have the best record in the world. They have the best record in the world. They're looking to complete the sweep tonight at Citi Field against the Mets, trying to win three in a row and finish the season series also. The Mets got swept four straight against L.A. back in early July.
It's now 2-0 Dodgers as Logan Forsythe, two-run single up the middle. So the Dodgers already up 2-0.
Get it going early.
And that's probably all they need tonight.
But talking about the Mets, we saw Med Rosario make his debut against Colorado earlier in the week. He got going. And we were screaming for it when we were on Sports on the Go 1. Finally getting a Med Rosario up here, and they waited till after the deadline. They send out Addison Reed. They send away Lucas Duda. They get some young pitching prospects back. And at this point in the season, the question is, when is Dominic Smith going to get called up to play first base every day?
That's the great question. I'll ask you as a Met fan, why isn't he here? You figured they moved Duda and they called up Rosario. Well, it's given that they're just going to bring up Dominic Smith and let him play, what's the holdup?
I have no idea. Sandy Alderson said it's going to happen before September, so you figure soon Dominic Smith will be up here playing first base. I just think it makes no sense that he's not up here already. I think that what the Mets are trying to do is try to fill out who's going to be on the team next year between Reyes, Cabrera, Walker. I think they're auditioning guys. Who do they want to bring back as part of the 18 team before they get Dominic Smith into the mix? I think they want to have a better idea of who's going to be there next year. Is Cabrera going to be their third baseman? Is Reyes going to be an option? What are they going to do with Jay Bruce? Does he have a fit maybe to play first base a little bit if Dominic Smith's not playing first base next year for some times or whatever the case may be? They're trying to mix it and match it, but I'm ready for Dominic Smith to get called. This guy was the PCL player of the month in July. He hit .388 out in Vegas. This guy's ready for the major leagues. And with a team where, 49-59, they're buried in the National League. They have been for a while. I think it's about time you get them up here and we see these two guys playing hand-in-hand to each other.
You just wonder what's taking so long. I don't know.
The only thing I could think of is they're auditioning guys around the diamond for next year.
I guess so. And, you just saw the news that they put a lot of these guys on waivers, and as expected, Granderson and Jay Bruce, which I don't understand the whole Jay Bruce
thing.
Can we talk about that for a moment?
Seriously,
I
wrote it down.
No
here.
Team want Jay Bruce.
Makes no sense. Not only has Jay Bruce shown he could play a little bit of first base, not saying he's a gold glover there, but who doesn't want 40 home runs and over 100 RBIs come season end, in the second half of the season?
Bring them on the DH if you're an American League team.
I'm shocked there isn't more interest for Jay Bruce, but I'll tell you what, and about a month ago I would have said there's no shot Jay Bruce is on the Mets next year. Wait just a second. I see a situation here. I think the Mets are growing more comfortable with Michael Conforto and Darren Field.
I told you.
Yeah, I wasn't sold, but I'll tell you what. Every time I watch Conforto out there, he continues to get better in center field. He covers more ground. He looks more comfortable.
That's what happens when you play every day.
And it might be the move for the Mets next season. And Jay Bruce, if he takes the qualifying offer, which the Mets will definitely offer him, it's $18 million next year. If not, they could come to maybe a 2 or 3 year deal. But I think Jay Bruce is going to be on this team next year in right field.
Why not?
Yeah.
If he's on pace to give you 40 and 110, you know what? The Mets could use that in their lineup moving forward. I mean, who else is going to give you that type of production? You could say Cespedes, and sure, if he's healthy, but Yoenis Cespedes has proven to you over and over again since he's been here, and really, you look at his entire career, he's had injury problems everywhere he's been, that this guy is going to miss time, and maybe a couple weeks, could be a month, doesn't matter.
He has a lot of lingering injuries that hang around.
This guy is always injured, and as great as he is when he's healthy, he's always injured. You are going to need Jay Bruce, and listen, you bring back Cespedes, he's under contract. Conforto will be out there. You know he's going to play.
Pretty decent offensive outfielder.
Yeah, offensively, you're going to be able to score some runs. Dominic Smith at first next year, he's a great first baseman defensively. Rosario is supposed to be a great shortstop defensively. You can improve your defense without having to really hurt your offense, as long as you can live with Jay Bruce in right and Conforto in center. And I got news for you. I've watched enough of Conforto in center where I think over the course of a season, yeah, will he make mistakes? Sure. But I think overall, he's good enough to hold down the position. And the Mets need his bat in the lineup, and they need Bruce's bat in the lineup too, so they're going to offer him the qualifier because I don't think any team's going to take him, and if he takes it, great. If not, maybe they end up signing him anyway. Maybe they give him a 3-year deal if it's at the right price.
Well, I'm saying if he doesn't take the qualifying offer, and I think he would if the Mets offer it to him.
Who are you bringing? Lorenzo Cain in here?
But also,
you a lot of money.
Also, what team out there is going to give Jay Bruce a 3 or 4 year contract? I don't think the market is there for Jay Bruce. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of interest in him. You would think at the deadline last year there was a decent amount, but this year, with as good as he's on pace for more home runs and more RBIs than he's ever had in his career. So
Conforto just threw a runner out at the plate, I'm told, according to what I'm seeing on Twitter.
Oh, great. There you go. Conforto continues. He really does. He continues to impress in the outfield for the Mets. And there's no doubt that Conforto is going to be the Mets starter next year in some capacity. He's proven that. He's an all-star. So where's right field for the Mets? You know, who is going to be right field? They have to figure out, you know, what they're going to do. What are they going to do at catcher? Catcher's a huge question mark for the Mets. And third base is a question mark for the Mets. And that brings me to my next point. David Wright has started light baseball activity in Port St. Lucie. And my question to you, Jake, is does it really matter at this point? What is David Wright coming back this season? I understand he wants to get in there.
Is he even going to come back this season?
How do you know he's not going to get hurt tomorrow? But is he going to play next season? I mean, when is enough here with David Wright? I mean, I love David Wright, but I can't watch the Mets say he's going to play, and then every year he doesn't play.
Well, the issue is with Wright, you're still paying the guy, so if he comes back,
he's got to retire. That's the problem.
You know, as much as Mets fans love David Wright, let's be honest here. At this point in his career and the injuries he's been through, the best thing David Wright could do for Mets fans and the organization is retire, and his money comes off the books, and they can invest that in somebody else to play third, or somebody to play the outfield spot, or to get a bullpen arm, or a starting pitcher. When you're paying David Wright $20 million to not play, it's hard to win. And listen, I know the Mets are a big market team, but they're not exactly the biggest spenders out there. I think their payroll is middle of the pack. We know the issues they've had with the Wilpons as far as spending money. You know, if you're the New York Mets and you're this organization, David Wright retiring would be the best possible thing moving forward.
And I don't know what the Mets expect out of David Wright at this point. And that's my point about them going into the offseason. They have to address third base. Third base needs to be in the Mets' offseason plans. You cannot tell me that David Wright is going to play a game for the Mets next season. I don't know if he'll ever play a game again. He's beginning light baseball activity in Port St. Lucie.
And this has happened before, and then he gets hurt.
And then he gets hurt, or they have to slow him down, and he's not quite ready, or this and that. It hasn't ended with David Wright. This season he was supposed to be ready for opening day, and he gets shut down on February 27th, and we haven't heard from him since. And I love David Wright, but at the same time, $40 million they've spent on David Wright the last 2 years. He's played 36 games. Come on. The Mets have to address third base. Seriously address it. Not a fill-in, not a guy who can play well in Wright's absence. They need a long-term solution at third base. I'm sorry. David Wright is not cutting anymore. This is 3 years where he has played the last 3 years in 70 games. It's crazy the amount of money they're paying him. And he's a Met great. Don't get me wrong. I love David Wright, but $19 million next season to play third base? I can't do it.
He's not going to play anything.
That's
He's
going to
get hurt. He might get hurt sneezing.
Well, that's the thing. And my question, another question to bring up here, is if David Wright gets going and he has to break down again and he can't quite get going, would he retire in the offseason? I don't think any of us know this, but do we think, can we speculate, if David Wright, if he can't get going this season, and he said he wants to try to get back there in back out on the field at Citi Field in the major leagues in 2017, if he can't, you know, is he going to try to play third base for the Mets next year? It's a very sticky situation here for Sandy Alderson in the Mets front office because they have to pay him, but he hasn't been healthy in 3 years.
Real quick before we go to break, from what you've seen from Rosario so far, what have been your thoughts as a diehard Met fan?
I think he's the real deal. I think this guy's going to be a good shortstop. I mean, I think defensively he's already there. Offensively, he's a bit of a free swinger, but, you know, he is as advertised. I think he's going to be really, really good for this team.
Well, I'll get it. For people who don't know, last year we were talking about Aaron Judge, and he only hit 179. We all remember. I got to give Dan Biak a lot of credit. He's wrong about a lot of things. However, you were spot on. You said, I think Aaron Judge is going to be a star. I think you even used the word superstar.
I might have said it.
You thought he was going to be a great player.
I did.
Even when he was struggling, I'll never figure out why. He struck out in half his at-bats. You saw something that nobody else
Twinkle
saw.
Twinkle in his eye, baby.
So maybe the Mets should hire you to be a pro scout, and you can make the team better. But you think Rosario is going to be the real deal?
I think he is.
You're right about Judge, so we'll see how it turns out here.
Exactly. Time will tell, as they say.
631-888-8811 is the number to call. A reminder that if you miss any of this show, you can check out the podcast available on iTunes the next day and, of course, on sportstalk1240.com. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we have some football talk for you. Jay Cutler signed with the Miami Dolphins. Colin Kaepernick remains a free agent. What's the latest with that? We also got to talk about the Jets and the Giants. We'll be right back right here on Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
30 minutes left in the program. Dan Budick, Jake Asman with you. Sports Talk 1240 here on AM 1240 WGBB. Number to call to get involved, 631-888-8811. And just a reminder, this hour of Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by Mac & Melts, located at 684 Stewart Avenue in Garden City, New York. Come check out Mac & Melts, the only restaurant in Long Island that specializes in everyone's favorite cheesy indulgences, mac and cheese and grilled cheese. There are 16 mac and cheeses and 12 different grilled cheeses to try, as well as 10 gourmet salads. Made fresh and made to order with only the best ingredients, which means there is something for everyone. Come try some of our fan favorites, which include the Mac and Melt, which is our mac and cheese in grilled cheese sandwich, and the Buffalo Chicken Mac and Cheese for those who like a little spice. Come treat yourself at Mac and Melt's, and if you go to Mac and Melt's and say the code word SportsTalk1240, you'll get 10% off. There you go, Mac and Melt's, baby.
Say Asman Budick Show, too.
Oh, Asman Budick Show, too.
You can say either one.
Unless either one.
If I said it earlier, I'll say it again. If you're just joining us, my mother was there last week, Alyssa Asman. She enjoyed it. Said it was a great grilled cheese, and she had, I forget what type of grilled cheese she got. She got a grilled cheese, and I think she did also get a melt of something. So she enjoyed it, and listen, if she's enjoying it, I'm sure we'll all enjoy it. That's how it usually goes nowadays, right?
I want to get there.
Mothers set the standard. And we will go there. Maybe we'll do a live broadcast from there.
No, keep an eye.
Sports Talk 1240 live from Mac and Melt. It's certainly possible. But Dan, I do want to get into something that we just alluded to just before. And that, of course, was Jay Cutler. The big news in the NFL today. Yes, a free agent signing on August 6th. It happened after Ryan Tannehill went down. This was immediately rumored. And the free agent quarterback that signed with the Miami Dolphins is former Chicago Bear quarterback.
And Fox Sports analyst. Don't forget about that.
Jay Cutler and Kevin Burkhardt, who we know well from his SNY days, and now he's a Fox Sports commenter. He just lost his color analyst because Jay Cutler is going back to the NFL. He signed a one-year, $10 million deal with the Miami Dolphins. A lot of things to digest and break down with this move. When I first saw it, though, I thought this was a no-brainer due to the fact that Adam Gase and Jay Cutler have a relationship. Gase was Jay Cutler's offensive coordinator for 1 year in Chicago. That was back in 2015, so two seasons ago. And you look at Cutler's numbers in that 2015 season, he actually had a very good year for Jay Cutler's standards. And at the end of the day, when you're trying to bring in a quarterback to win right now, and it's August 6th, you have no OTAs, you have no offseason workouts, it's all about training camp, preseason, week one on September 10th. The Dolphins had to move quickly after they lost Ryan Tannehill, and I thought bringing in a guy like Jay Cutler, who I know is in broadcasting, is probably maybe not in football shape just yet, bringing him in made the most sense to me because of his familiarity with the offense. It's not as much for him to have to come in and handle all at once. He knows what he's doing. This guy's a football player. He's not great. I don't want to make it sound like Jay Cutler is the second coming of Johnny Unitas. He's not. But under the circumstances, I thought this move made the most sense for Miami.
And Miami's a team that won 10 games a year ago. They made the playoffs. You know, they're looking to build upon that. Even though Tannehill's out for the year, and it's a very tough loss in him going down on Saturday with the knee injury, you know, they want to bring in a guy that's going to give them results, where they're going to have the best chance to win. And I look at the numbers in 2015, when Adam Gase was the offensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears, Jay Cutler threw for over 3,600 yards, 21 touchdowns, 11 picks, completed almost 65% of his passes. I'll tell you what, I'll sign up for that. Even if Jay's not going to give you those kind of numbers, the fact that he had that kind of success with Gase in charge, and you could bring him into Miami, and in theory, it's a more seamless transition in getting him with the offense, getting him familiar with what they're trying to do to put points on the board, it makes the perfect sense for the Dolphins. Now, will it work out? Listen, it's tough to win in the NFL. When you lose your starting quarterback on August 4th, you're probably not, unless you're Dallas Cowboys of a year ago, you're not going to have a lot of success. But can Jay Cutler come in and give the Dolphins a fighting chance here to build on what they did? Absolutely.
I mean, I got numbers for you right here about Jay Cutler, and it's going to lead us into Kaepernick. For everyone screaming, how dare the Dolphins not sign Colin Kaepernick, and we'll get to that in just a moment.
This move gives the Dolphins, I think, the best chance to win this
right
year.
Away. Over the last 16 starts that Ryan Tannehill and Jay Cutler have made, total QBR, Tannehill, 58.3. Cutler, 58.6. Touchdowns to interceptions. Tannehill, 21-13. Cutler, 19-13. Passing yards. So once again, this is over their last 16 starts that Cutler and Tannehill have made. Tannehill, 3,890 yards. Cutler, 3,840 yards. These guys, they put up identical numbers to one another, and Cutler knows the offense. So he's coming in. He still has a month to go before the season. It's enough time for a guy that knows how to play the position, knows the playbook already. It makes sense. The idea that the Dolphins decided to sign Jay Cutler over Colin Kaepernick because of Colin's protest, that's not the reason why they did it here. The reason why Ryan Tannehill, after he went down with an injury, and the reason why they went with Jay Cutler to replace Tannehill is strictly because they believe that Jay Cutler gives them the best chance to win. And I agree with Mike Tannenbaum, who's a friend of the show. I agree with Mike Tannenbaum. That is a wise move, because on August 6th, and you're trying to bring in a free agent quarterback, you don't want to bring in Colin Kaepernick, who has to learn an entire offense in just a month. At least Jay Cutler comes in knowing all the plays, and it's just about getting acclimated to playing with new receivers.
And the only thing is that you mentioned he might not be in football shape, and he was gearing up to be a broadcaster on Fox. He wasn't even going to play in the league this year or an attempt to play. You know, how quickly is he going to get into football shape, where on opening day or the third preseason game, is he going to be ready to compete and be a starting quarterback for a team that's contending for a playoff spot? That's the only question mark here with Jay Cutler. But again, going back to just the conversation about him or Colin Kaepernick, they have a better chance of winning with Cutler because of the success Cutler has had with Gase, the fact that you look at, and you made a great point comparing these two guys, Tannehill and Cutler, over the last 16 starts, their numbers are almost identical. So Cutler's not a bad option. The only thing is, will he be ready? Will he be in shape? Will he be have the mindset to gear back up and play an NFL season when all offseason he thought he was going to be a broadcaster?
Point blank, who gives you a better chance to win if you're the Dolphins? Colin Kaepernick or Jay Cutler?
It's not even close.
It's not even a debate.
It's not even a debate.
And it's frustrating to me, and I don't want to be the guy that's like, oh, you know, yeah, how dare you say bad things about Colin Kaepernick. I don't agree with his protest, but he has every right to do it. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I look at Colin Kaepernick and he's the devil. That's ridiculous. You know, I don't agree with what he did, but he has every right to do it as an American in this country. That's not what this case is about. We'll get into Kaepernick in a moment about whether or not he's quote-unquote being blackballed from the league. But in this particular case, for the Dolphins to be criticized for going with Cutler instead of Kaepernick, I think is ridiculous. First off, Stephen Ross is one of the more progressive owners in the league. I was at a sports business conference in October, and I met Stephen Ross. And the question was asked to him, part of this roundtable, with Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavs: do you support players kneeling for the national anthem? Dan Gilbert was very against it. You know who was really for it? Stephen Ross. Stephen Ross said, I support it. If any of my players did it, I would support them. I have no problem with it. It's their right as an American. Colin Kaepernick is not on the Miami Dolphins, not because he's being blackballed. It's because they thought Jay Cutler gave them a better chance to win. And he does. And that's what it comes down to.
And that's why they're rolling the dice here with Cutler, a year, $10 million. And they figure, you know what? If Cutler stinks, he stinks. But you know what? At least they're doing something. And they're going to bring in a guy they think can at least give him a fighter's chance. You lose your starting quarterback on August 6th, you're probably screwed to begin with. You know, your season probably is not destined for long either, but the fact they could bring in Cutler, he's had success with Gase.
And they're still probably going to be right around where they were.
And
maybe Cutler has a career year.
And that's the thing, you don't know. You know, you don't know. Cutler's a guy who can maybe give them something. Again, Colin Kaepernick just wouldn't have been a fit. He doesn't know the offense, and it would take him a while to learn it. And they don't want to go through that learning curve. They're ready to win. They want to put a team on there that's ready come the beginning of September to compete, quarterback and all. Colin Kaepernick said he might not have that.
I agree.
That's the difference.
I absolutely.
And Kaepernick, you know what? I feel bad that he's not getting a job. I really do. I think he's good enough. And you look at the guys who are in the NFL with jobs, he deserves it. But I understand the distraction. I get it. We saw this with Tim Tebow when he didn't get picked up. Teams don't want to deal with media attention. It is nothing. I don't think it has anything to do with his anything that has to go with his right as an American to kneel or not to kneel. It has to do with the distraction, the media attention it brings around your team. Bottom line is, clubs don't want that, and that's why Kaepernick doesn't have a job. It's not because of his belief. That's the misconception here, and we've spoken about this before. The misconception that Kaepernick doesn't have a job because of his belief. It's the media attention that he brings at this point to a team. And that teams don't want to deal with it.
I think at the end of the day, as we start to dive into this Kaepernick situation right here, Cutler going to Miami makes sense for the scheme standpoint. Now, you made it the point. Colin Kaepernick is good enough to be on a team's roster. Absolutely he is. But the term blackballed, I don't think
it's
the right
wrong.
Term.
I agree.
I don't think NFL owners are getting together and conspiring against Colin Kaepernick. I don't think that's what this is. I think blackballed, the term that's being used, is not the correct term. I think what is happening is, it's a point that you just made in part. Colin Kaepernick, whether you like him, whether you agree with him, whether you can't stand him and you disagree with him, what he did, he had a right to do. But it's still a distraction. And as a backup quarterback, if he gets signed by a team, you start asking him questions about this. You start asking him questions about that. You ask him about the protest. You ask him why he didn't stand. Other guys on the team have to be asked about it and share their opinions. NFL owners do not want to pay a backup quarterback to also be a distraction. You could say, well, it's not his fault he's a distraction. That's partly true. But it's also not Tim Tebow's fault that he was considered a distraction, and he's also out of the league as well. It's very similar. And I know Colin did not commit a crime, and I feel bad that he's not signed. But he knew the consequences of taking a stand like this. And whether you agree with him or disagree with him, NFL owners do not have to pay the guy if they don't want. If they deem him a distraction, that doesn't mean they're blackballing him. That means they're making a business decision. If half your fan base disagrees with what Kaepernick did and you alienate half your fan base and the guy cannot produce on the field at a starter level anymore, you're not going to sit here and say Colin Kaepernick is worth the money at a backup rate. If he's starting for you and he's still playing great, fine. If he's playing like Tom Brady and Tom Brady kneeled, Tom Brady would get another job instantly. Why? He's still playing great. Colin Kaepernick, at this point, the last couple years since Jim Harbaugh left, has not been the same quarterback, people. This is not the guy that took the Niners to a game within the Super Bowl and took them to a Super Bowl that previous year with Harbaugh. He's not the same quarterback anymore, and to act like he's being blackballed, I think is the wrong word. I think he should be in the league. He's clearly good enough to be a backup somewhere. But so was Tim Tebow. And if you look at the situation and say, well, why isn't he in the league? He's not in the league because he can't play. He's in the league because he's a distraction, not because he kneeled. The kneeling is part of it. That's why he's a distraction. But what he did is not criminal. NFL owners just don't want to bring in a guy that's considered a distraction.
It's a distraction it brings that teams don't want to deal with. Now, the Baltimore Ravens have said they'd be open to bringing in Colin Kaepernick. There's a landing spot, maybe. Maybe Kaepernick goes to Baltimore as the backup. But I'll tell you what, the reason why it's not done yet, and it's been speculated, is because the Ravens know the second Colin Kaepernick joins the team, not only is Kaepernick being asked about it, but the whole team is being asked
about
it.
They sent out a press release saying that they're reviewing it. What team sends out a press release about a player that is a backup they are considering to sign?
You wouldn't even hear about it.
That's the issue. And, you know, Tim Tebow, when he signed with the Jets, what was it like?
He got a press conference.
When is he going to play? The backup quarterback got a press conference. The Wildcat quarterback, the guy that was a punt protector.
Who didn't have one touchdown all season,
didn't have more than 10 offensive touches the entire season. And I don't want this to to be we're just ripping on Colin Kaepernick. I don't agree with what he did. I've been very open about that. But he has a right to do it. He's not in the league because he's deemed a distraction. He's not in the league because he's not that good anymore. He's considered a backup quarterback by talent evaluators. If he was good enough to start, he would have gotten a job. He's not good enough to start anymore. Blake Bortles beat this guy out last year. And you can look at, whoa, Colin had 16 touchdowns and only a couple interceptions last year. If you watch him against the New York Jets, if you're a Jet fan or you're a New York football fan and you watch that game, Colin Kaepernick stinks. He's not the same quarterback anymore. And he hasn't been for a number of years now. And that's why this guy is unsigned. Because is he good enough to be a backup? He is. But when you're a backup, you're not supposed to be a distraction, and whether you like him or not, him being there, just like Tim Tebow being on your team, automatically makes him a distraction.
And the backup quarterback shouldn't get any attention. Unless he's playing, the backup quarterback should not get any attention, and that's the problem. No one wants a backup quarterback to be getting that much attention. 631-888-8811, call on the line, Jake in Virginia. Jake, what's going on?
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Doing very well. Wanted to hear you guys talk a little bit about the New York Jets. Yes, there is still a football team. The New York Jets are playing in the NFL. What do you guys think about them so far?
And, Jake, thank you for giving us the call. And we were going to get into the Jets in just a few moments. Listen, the Jets are going to be – it's going to be a long season for the New York Jets and their fans. It comes down to what are you going to get at the quarterback position? How well are these wide receivers? Stewart, Hansen, how are they going to develop? Because I'll tell you what, now when Nunn was out with the neck injury – this wide receiving core is very slim. And the quarterbacks, we know who's going to be the guy. What are they going to do on opening day? It's going to be a long season.
You look at this Jets team, and you ask yourself as a Jet fan, what am I supposed to watch this year? What can I get excited about? How can this team surprise? How can the Jets have what's deemed a good season?
What is a good season?
I don't know.
Wouldn't the best season be 2-14 in the first overall pick?
I thought a lot about this over the past couple days, and I was on a talk show in Burlington, Vermont, and one of the hosts asked me this question: what's a good season for the Jets? What do you expect? I've really thought about this answer. There's two scenarios for the Jets this year, Dan. Two scenarios where the Jets can have what's considered a good season. The first scenario, Christian Hackenberg or Bryce Petty, because I don't want to count out Petty, even though I think the Jets view him as a backup and Hackenberg's the guy they think could possibly be a starter. The first scenario is Hackenberg or Petty come into camp, win the job, play great, start week one, or prove themselves to be a franchise quarterback sooner rather than later this season. They play good. The Jets win some more games than maybe people thought they were going to win. Maybe they win 6 or 7 games, and they really come on at the end of the year because of the quarterbacks on this team, because of Hackenberg, let's say. And if that's the case, you feel good. Hey, you know, we spent the year trying to rebuild, but we also spent the year finding our franchise quarterback moving forward. The other scenario, 2-14, 0-16, 1-15. And it ends with a top 3 pick in the NFL draft. The only way the Jets can have a successful year is if Hackenberg turns out to be the real deal, or they are so bad, which a lot of people think they're going to be, they get that top pick in the draft, and they finally can draft the future franchise quarterback for this team moving forward. That is it. Either they're good and they overachieve with Hackenberg, or they're horrendous. You get everyone off the roster that can't play. Hackenberg and Petty are gone. McCown is gone. You draft that quarterback top 3, and you have something to build upon moving forward. You have your Mariota. You have your Winston. You have your Andrew Luck. You have your Cam Newton. You have a guy that's first overall, second overall, third overall. It doesn't matter, that you believe in can be your guy moving forward. That is the only scenario as a Jet fan where you look at the season and go, either we overachieved with Hack or we're horrible and we know what we got to do come draft time.
And I think the one similarity in both those things, which the Jets have to do this season, and the only way this season is a success, is if they do it. Find the quarterback. If it's Hackenberg, great. If it's not, get out there and have a bad season, if it so be it. If Hackenberg's not going to be good, the quarterback, the Jets are going to have a long season anyways. And get in the top 3 and draft a Darnold. You know, draft a top quarterback and get that guy to be this team, to be the anchor of this team going forward into 2018, 19, 20, and beyond. And get a quarterback in there. But they have to address the quarterback position. It is enough. It is enough. It is enough. It is enough. We need a quarterback to hang our hat on. The Jets need a quarterback going forward. I'd love if it's Hackenberg, but if it's not, this season needs to be used as finding the quarterback. If you're going to use this season and draft Darnold number 1, 2, or 3, or whatever it is, great. If Hackenberg's the guy, great. That's also great. But it's about finding the guy. They need to. They need to use this season to evaluate that position properly. Now, what are the Jets going to do at quarterback? Well, going into the season, I think McCown is going to be the starter come opening day.
I think he's going to win the job, too. And if you're the Jets, you got to look at Josh McCown and understand that the minute that this team starts losing a couple games in a row, he's out of there.
He has to be.
I don't need
if they're 0-3, if they're 0-3,
enough. I was going to say if they're 0-2, I don't need to see Josh McCown. He's going to be...
We know what Josh McCown is.
I know what he is. I've watched Josh McCown for the last 15 years. I know what this guy is. He's a solid backup quarterback.
He's all of a sudden going to become Tom Brady.
Or he's Fitzpatrick in 2015, and we get guilted into giving him more money. That's a worse scenario. This Jets season comes down to what we've always said for weeks now. The minute they didn't draft a quarterback in the NFL draft in May, we knew it was about Hackenberg, Petty, or next year's draft. That's it. There's like 265 days until the NFL draft. That's what the season's about. Either they're drafting a quarterback a year from now, or they have the quarterback on the roster in Hackenberg. Because I don't think Petty's the guy. Something tells me Petty's more of a backup than he is a starter. Hackenberg, we don't know. We've never seen this guy play. Now, the reports at a training camp have been he's looked a lot better. But is better good enough to be a franchise quarterback?
He wasn't even good enough to suit up last year.
And the Jets were horrendous. So what does that tell you? They gave him the definition of a redshirt year. This guy only dressed once. Week 17, he was the backup quarterback.
And everyone called for the play, and they wouldn't even put him into a meaningless Week 17 game.
No. They decided, let's keep him in carbonite, and let's not even use him. Let's Han Solo him, if you will, for you Star Wars fans out there. Let's put him up there and not use him. That's what happened with Hackenberg.
I think Hackenberg has to play 13 games this season for the Jets. 12 to 13 games.
At least 12.
Because otherwise...
At least 75% of the season.
Otherwise, you're in a situation where, say the team is really bad, and you don't know what you have in Hackenberg, and you draft Darnold, and you get rid of Hackenberg, and Hackenberg ends up being good.
Well, you know what the issue is? Last year, when the Jets were 1-7, and they were still throwing out
Ryan
Fitzpatrick...
We wouldn't even be in this situation if we knew what Hackenberg could give us.
If he got a chance.
If we saw him last
season. And
it
went to Petty. Petty got hurt, so then you go to Hackenberg. Why is it that this guy needed a redshirt year? That only puts more pressure on Mike McCagan. I'll tell you what, if the Jets are horrible this year and Hackenberg's bad and Petty's bad, that's now two quarterbacks that Mike McCagan has drafted that have been awful. And if that's the case, do I want Mike McCagan in charge of a top three pick in the draft trying to get the Jets' next great quarterback? Do I want him to be the guy making that decision to evaluate the next great quarterback for the Jets? I don't know. So I need to see how this year shakes out. Other things that could happen for the Jets that will make you say as a Jet fan, okay, we have this. Leonard Williams continues to improve. Darren Lee gets better. Marcus May, who's been tremendous in training camp, he goes out there as a second-round pick and finally contributes, because we know the Jets' history. They can't draft in the second round. It's embarrassing. Jamal Adams, he comes in as the sixth overall pick, who we all know was a steal. He plays great. There's some talent on this roster, especially defensively. There are three first-round picks on that defensive line, including Sheldon Richardson, who had a terrible year last season and is playing for a contract. Muhammad Wilkerson was awful last year. Now he's healthy. Can he improve? There's talent on defense. Offensively, it's probably going to be a struggle because the Jets don't know how to draft a quarterback. So for me to sit here and say, well, I think Hackenberg's going to surprise, that'd be naive of me. The Jets don't deserve the benefit of the doubt until they prove it. But can they be better defensively? They can. Offensively, it's probably going to be a struggle, but at least you want to see the young guys on this team improve. Kind of none will get better as the number one guy, and you hope that neck injury he suffered last night's not too serious.
Doesn't linger into the season.
And he'll be okay. But this is a young team with young talent. Let them play, and if they're awful, we know what's going to happen. They're going to draft the quarterback, but if they somehow surprise, maybe that means that Hackenberg is actually a decent quarterback, and you hope he is. They invested a second-round pick in this guy.
You're right. Christian Hackenberg, deserves the opportunity here, I think, to play 11, 12 games for the Jets this season. McCown, I don't anticipate him coming in opening night or opening day and being a tremendous starter. If he struggles and the team doesn't play well early on, you know, when is it right time for Todd Bowles to recognize to put him in? We all were calling for it a year ago. Is Todd Bowles going to do right by the Jets franchise going forward and know when to sit McCown? That's a concern. And also, if McCagnan's on the hot seat, isn't Bowles on the hot seat? What's a good year for Todd Bowles this season? How do we evaluate Bowles?
I think it's terribly unfair for Todd Bowles.
It really
is. This guy has to come in. Listen, I don't know if Todd Bowles is a great coach or not. You know, if you ask me after the first year, could he be a good coach? Yeah, you know, they overachieved. They were 10-6 with Fitzpatrick. I think he deserves credit for Ryan Fitzpatrick having a great year. But the following year, last year, Todd Bowles was horrible. You know, his coaching was terrible. His clock management, his
in-game
management.
Adjustments. I mean, we said we were yelling for a week after week. The seemed like the
in-game adjustments. They did nothing.
They did nothing. They couldn't adjust. Halftime adjustments. The Jets did never heard of it last season. Bulls couldn't do anything.
Now you strip the talent down on the roster.
Well, so that's the problem.
How do you judge the quarterback position? That's the question that you have to ask yourself. How do you judge the quarterback position? How do you judge the younger players on this talent? How is he supposed to win without having great talent around the roster? I think the only way you could do it is you notice young guys get better and you see improvement out of those guys, because that's it.
And you mentioned McCagnan, maybe, depending on do you want him being the guy to pick the quarterback if they go draft a top quarterback in the top three. McCagnan and Bowles, if McCagnan is somehow, say this season's a mess, don't you have to bring both these guys back? It's a tough situation. You're going to let McCagnan go.
Or you're going to fire Bowles and then hire McCagnan hire a new coach?
Or you're going to fire McCagnan and leave Bowles? Then we have that Rex Ryan, John Idzik nonsense.
That I don't think would ever happen. I think the only scenario that happens is McCagnan stays on to pick the coach and then he gets to draft the quarterback.
I just don't think it's fair to Bowles to judge him on this season.
It's difficult. And you know what? The Jets are doing something they should have done from year one. If they were truly going to try and strip it down, this should have been done in Todd Bowles' first season, not in year three. And that's the problem for Bowles. He has to try and win games with a team that's not going to win very many games in all likelihood. Not easy to do for a guy that's entering year three, is coming off a 5-11 season, and now, oh yeah, everyone thinks the Jets are going to win two games this year. So the Jets go 2-14. You're really going to fire the coach when everyone thought they were going to go 2-14? It's not fair to him, but at the same time, life's not fair. That's how the NFL usually goes.
You're right. I just
if they go 2-14, is he keeping his job?
You're right. Theoretically, it would be two losing seasons in a row, a two-win season. Seven combined wins in 2 years. You're picking inside the top five or top six again for the second year in a row.
I don't think they're going to be 2-14, though. Am I crazy for thinking this team can win four or five games?
I think they're a three-win team.
Am I crazy for thinking that maybe Hackenberg could be a game manager and could win four or five games? It's the Jets. They usually win games when they're not supposed to.
You are absolutely right. That could happen.
And the defense has improved, is it not?
It's better. I just don't know how they're going to score points on offense. I really don't. I look at their offense.
Forte, Powell, decent backs, okay receivers, not great,
okay,
but good enough.
Oh, I don't like their receiving core. I hated the fact they got rid of Decker and
Marshall. I didn't like it because I thought, you know what, if you're going to try and find out what you have in these
quarterbacks,
give
him a chance.
Give the guy a competent receiver. Eric Decker's a very good receiver.
Absolutely, and you understand maybe Marshall. Getting rid of Decker, I really didn't like. I wanted to give Hackenberg, if he was going to be the quarterback, maybe a comfort blanket or a security blanket early on, and I felt like Decker would have been the perfect target. I really didn't like getting rid of Decker. Robbie Anderson, you got Adarius Stewart and Chad Henson. Those two guys have to be players. They cannot have two more busts at wide receivers. With the depth they have at receiver right now, Henson better be a player, or Henson better be a player,
and Stewart has to be a player.
Third-round pick out of Alabama, the whole thing, national champ, whatever. Big time
save in the rings.
Save in the rings. The whole thing. This guy's got to be a player. I don't need another D. Milnard situation. Stephen Hill. Can the Jets get something out of some wide receivers they draft? It is big. They need something out of Adarius Stewart. They have to. There's no depth at receiver right now. And Robbie Anderson, I like his speed, but he has terrible hands. I can't get behind him.
I think Robbie Anderson had a game that was so bad against the Cardinals, I actually tweeted out, don't let him on the team playing home. And he actually had an okay rookie year. He wasn't terrible last year.
I just don't like him.
I don't like him either, but he's
very
terrible.
Fast. He's fast.
But he's a former alum of your college.
I know, yeah. We went to the same school. It's great.
You shared the school with him for a semester, and then you left.
Was he there at that time?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, that's our show. Robbie Anderson, please have a good year so you could be allowed on the team playing back home. That does it for us. He's Dan. I'm Jake. Coming up next in the other hour of Sports Talk 1240, Mike Vivallo will be in here filling that time. If you missed any of the show, check out the podcast tomorrow on iTunes and sportstalk1240.com. Thanks for listening. For Dan Budick, I'm Jake Asman saying so long, everyone.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.